Ground Cover News is a nonprofit street paper that was founded in April 2010 as a means to empower low-income persons to make the transitions from homeless to housed and from jobless to employed. Vendors purchase each copy of the Ground Cover News regular edition at our office for 50 cents. This money goes towards production costs. Vendors work selling the paper on the street for $2, keeping all income and tips from each sale. This audio production was made possible by the Ann Arbor District Library, recorded at Fifth Avenue Studios. If you consistently enjoy Ground Cover Speaks, continuing to buy physical newspapers from Ground Cover vendors ensures that we can sustain production. The physical paper and in-person interaction is at the heart of our work. You can find the link to our next audio recording in the upcoming print issue of Ground Cover News. Thanks for listening. Special thanks to our print advertisers, the People's Food Co-op, St. Francis of Assisi Parish, First Baptist Church, Bethlehem United Church of Christ, the Office of Community and Economic Development, Cineholic, McKinley Tenants Association, Ann Arbor for Public Power, Four Directions, and Michigan Action for Cuba Committee. Letter to the Editor. Last Wednesday, during our regularly scheduled lunch at Liberty Plaza, one of our guests was arrested. We were finished serving food, yes, but our community was still present and fed up staff did all they could to stop the arrest, without success. I immediately followed up with three AAPD staff, an officer, a detective, and a sergeant, all of whom have a working relationship with Fed Up and an understanding that when Fed Up is serving, and guests are receiving services, no investigations will occur out of respect for the community and our work. How can people safely come to have their needs met if they are afraid police will go fishing in a pond? I was given the contact information of the lieutenant who was in charge of scheduling the Wednesday day shifts, and he is not responding to my requests for a meeting. It's been 3 business days and 2 weekend days since I've reached out. In our past experience, police activity breeds more police activity. I am still working behind the scenes to meet with AAPD leadership about this gross misuse of power, but we need your presence with us. I was told that the man who was arrested for petty theft would be taken to the station, fingerprinted, and released if there was no other warrant, meaning these officers exerted power over a community member, a nonviolent community member they weren't planning on even incarcerating, while compromising the integrity of our program and the safety of the rest of our community who no longer feel fully comfortable accessing our services. What was the point of doing that while our community members were gathered to receive services? If you're able to come out to our free meals these next couple of weeks to observe, hold space, and to work for justice and peace in our community, we need you. Ann Arbor Police Department, I'm willing to meet with you anytime to work out an agreement that keeps our community safe and cared for. Reverend Anna Taylor McCants.
War and Peace, Commodity Fetish and Compliance Culture by Ken Parks, Ground Cover Vendor 490. The goal of U.S. foreign policy is to keep and extend the United States dollar as an indispensable global financial tool. Money is created at will by those in command. The gods of wealth and power create the illusion of eternal supremacy through their human servants. Many are those who succumb to this illusion and keep their nose to the grindstone with no time or energy to look honestly at their lives. Even in this dark age of chaotic and confusing conflict, there are those who speak the truth and many who understand simple and clear when they encounter it. Both Presidents Eisenhower and Kennedy warned us of the military-industrial complex and the need for peace. The war machine has grown like a cancer in the commodity fetish culture of the capitalist political economy. The invisible hand, market forces control resources, labor, production, and distribution in order to maximize profit. War profiteering becomes central to budget and policy decisions. Despite the worldwide desire for peace after World War II, the warmongers moved to force Hollywood to glorify war and prepare for the next one to combat communism, the eternal enemy. General Reinhard Gehlen, Hitler's chief of intelligence on the Eastern Front, was recruited for the Cold War. His contacts in Ukraine had received CIA support from the time the Office of Strategic Services was dissolved into the CIA in order to focus on regime change in the USSR and stop the Chinese Revolution. The North Atlantic Treaty Organization, a key player in the Cold War, was created to encircle the USSR. France's invitation included the commitment to help them regain control of Vietnam and Algeria if they joined NATO and helped in the effort. The promise that NATO's nation membership would not move east was part of German reunification. The fact that the promise was not put in writing is the U.S. rationale for NATO expansion and aggressive war games with nuclear weapons nearby. NATO war crimes in Yugoslavia, Kosovo, Afghanistan, Libya, and Syria, and the de facto war in Ukraine are now spreading to Asia as plans for war with China continue. The culture of endless war feeds an addiction to the adrenaline rush that violence gives to many. Those who glory in violence may be well paid in service of the empire. The supremacist ideology, which promotes settler colonialism and subsequent imperialisms, is deeply rooted in pathological ego formations. The struggle for peace and freedom begins with unconditional love, which is expressed through action. The accumulation of wealth and power by any means necessary is the religion of the global commodity fetish culture, sometimes called the Washington Consensus or rule-based policy. War is the center of all decision-making as the corporate state revolving door for financial interest extends the full-spectrum domination strategy into the digital age. Information control and demand for your time is the front line in the war of full-spectrum domination. The demand to be in compliance with bureaucratic fiats based on terms and conditions that no one fully understands takes so much of our time that we easily forget to make our own lives a priority. Preparation for nuclear war is behind the mass shootings and violence of everyday life as democracy is replaced by autocracy at work and play becomes sensationalized consumerism. Our addiction to self-destruction is shocking. Scientists design food that is addictive with no real attention to nutrition. The data on this violence in food production and consumption points to sharp declines in mental and physical health. The many hormone-disrupting chemicals increase the health challenges we all face. The trauma of ignorance is wedded to a belief in dualism. The error of splitting reality into two parts, usually self and other. Identity thinking can fixate on a separate self and intensify the separation from reality. This is a violation of natural law, which clarifies the interrelatedness of everything. The basic step towards freedom is to recognize ignorance and give it up. The addiction to violence and war is born from a belief in dualism, the need to be a good person facing many bad actors. Facing reality is a challenge which is best countered with a pause for a breath with each obstacle and compost the energy of dualism into the energy of completion. Reality is complete by itself. All its parts are interrelated and united. To separate anything from reality is the error of dualism. The experience of this completeness is the simplest and most elusive of experiences because it has no cause and cannot be contrived. There are moments in history such as the awakening of Shakyamuni under a tree and Jesus on the cross that instill awareness and gratitude for the completeness of reality. We have many ancestors. Indigenous-centered living opens the door to a grand display of our shared heritage. We share air, water, and sun as well in the blessings of interrelatedness. We are at a crossroads of history now, and clear choices can be made to help us discover our true nature. When compassion, love, and kindness and wisdom arise, the struggle of humankind will change course from war culture to happiness culture. Our addiction to ignorance will be composted in the best way as we learn to benefit all beings without exception, self and others seamlessly. Please visit VFPGoldenRuleProject.org, Ann Arbor Coalition Against the War.org, and Ann Arbor Community Commons.org for more information. The Golden Rule Sailboat team will be at the Ann Arbor Downtown Library August 14th. We are planning a water ceremony with Beatrice Menezequid Jackson, one of the indigenous elders of Michigan, and the Golden Rule team on the Detroit River at Milliken State Park on August 15th. See the flyer to the left for more details. Let's keep in touch.
Housed, Gary Jackson, Alcoholics Anonymous, and Being Responsible for Oneself. An interview by me, Lindsay Kalka, and Gary Jackson, who will be narrated by Marcona Love. Tell us about your journey to housing.
I was born in Detroit and raised in Belleville. I had an unmanageable life for a while. I was drinking and panhandling, being mean to people, generally just unhappy. I tore up cars. My alcoholism played a big part in my life. I worked steadily for most of my life, several different jobs, but the drinking made it unmanageable. The alcohol took a big toll. When my mother and father died in the 90s, I was lost. I'm the youngest of 11 siblings, but I couldn't rely on my brothers or sisters. We were grown. I had to fight it out on my own. I went back and forth between Detroit, Ann Arbor, Kalamazoo, in and out of county jail, hospitals, thankfully never prison. I was homeless, off and on last year. I stayed with my brother for some time, but that didn't work out. I had to get a foundation in my life. Most recently, I became homeless because of a bad relationship in Kalamazoo. It was not healthy for me. I've been in Washtenaw County since January 3rd of this year. I am in my 60s, and I knew I had to get it in my head that I have to quit this. I didn't know where my life was going until I turned around and got into recovery. I started in the 80s, but I couldn't stick with it. If I had, I would have had 30 years of my life back. I moved into Hospitality House, IPSY, in January, which helped me stay motivated. Hospitality House is a Catholic worker house in Ypsilanti. It motivated me to want my own space. I wanted to be responsible for myself. I had to bite the bullet, humble myself, save money, set goals to move on. I started to lead Alcoholics Anonymous meetings there in January and kept it up since. I want to show other people it works, even where I come from. I'm proud, and I'm thanking God I am staying focused.
What was the biggest barrier that you faced in obtaining housing?
I was afraid I would lose my life. How many chances would God give me? I used Section 8, which required a lot of coordination with the Robert J. Delano Center and my caseworker. I had to prove my birth certificate, which I didn't have. So I had to order a birth certificate and wait for that. Thankfully, I already had my Social Security card and ID because that would have added on more waiting time. I needed references and had to fill out a large application. And my whole time, I had to save my money. You need to have your finances in check. I worked multiple jobs. All that required motivation and follow through.
What is an unexpected, positive thing that most people don't expect when transitioning into housing?
First, comfort. I wasn't out in the cold anymore, sleeping outside. That was painful for me. How much pain could I take? Being homeless was a blow to the head. Second, keeping myself clean and fresh. I don't have to go days without washing anymore. That's a big plus. Keeping my hair combed, brushing my teeth, keeping my hygiene up, it feels good to open my closet and see clothes and shoes to choose from.
What pieces of advice would you give to people who are experiencing homelessness?
If it's alcohol or drugs, any addiction that's hindering you, you've got to change. I'm going to tell you to stop. I'm not going to tell you to stop, but you've got to change. You'll be tired of living the way you are living. You feel good about yourself and will be more open to help and helping others. It's not easy, but there is help out there. Pay for the roof over your head first. Then light bills, food, whatever, but housing first.
What's next for you?
Right now, I'm working part-time at Michigan Medicine and the Salvation Army. I'm saving my money and building my credit up. My hospital bills accumulated, but I'm working on clearing them. Also, I am working on getting a car. My goal is to keep working, saving, and move up. I can't wait to make an even bigger step. It's only up from here.
Can You Dig It? An advice column by Washtenaw Literacy. Question: how can I tell if information I find online is accurate? The internet is absolutely filled with information, with millions of websites, articles, posts, and forums providing details and opinions about every subject imaginable. Wading through the Google search results for any topic can leave you feeling overwhelmed. Sometimes you might even find two different sources online that contradict each other. When trying to get reliable information from the internet, it is really important to be able to tell which sources are credible and which sources shouldn't be trusted. One easy trick to help tell if a website is a reliable source of information is to look at the domain name of the website. If the website's address ends in .gov or .edu, there is a very high likelihood that the information found there is truthful. For a website address to end in .gov, it has to be affiliated with a branch of the U.S. government at the federal, state, or local level. For a website to end in .edu, it must be affiliated with a higher education institution. Because of the restrictions on their use, websites with these addresses are much more likely to contain accurate information. Another strategy you can use when sifting through the results of an internet search is to pay attention to the publisher, the author, and any sources that are referenced. If you are not familiar with the organization or website that is posting information, you should be more careful about trusting it. If the author of an article or website is someone reputable, such as a credentialed scientist or journalist, that is a good sign. If an article or website links to other sources, that can also be a positive indicator of its trustworthiness. Even in those cases, it can still be a good idea to verify what you find by looking at other websites and sources of information. Try using additional internet searches to find out more about the publisher, author, and claims made by online sources. It's important to keep in mind that sources can contain accurate information and still be biased. All the information contained in an article or website can be true, but other important information could be left out. This is another reason why it can be helpful to do additional research about your sources themselves. Looking at multiple sources that cover the same topic is one of the best ways to get the full scope of available information. It may go without saying, but you should be especially careful about information found on websites that have a clear agenda or that want to sell you something. Be aware that online advertisers often dress up, their content to look like news articles. The top few results under Google searches are often there because businesses have paid for them to show up. Thankfully, Google labels these results as sponsored. Avoiding sponsored content can help you find more reliable resources and information. Question: I've received an email telling me that several people who I went to high school with are trying to get in touch with me. I'm not sure if this is a scam or not. How can I tell if the emails are legit? Spam and scam emails have been around since the early years of the internet, and they remain a huge problem for email users today. Although most email services provide some form of automatic filtering, directing suspicious emails away from your inbox and into a special spam folder, it is always possible that some unwanted or nefarious emails will get through. Falling for a scam email can lead to hacked accounts, stolen money, and identity theft. To avoid those disastrous outcomes, it's crucial to remain vigilant when going through your inbox. Let's consider the suspicious email that you received, which claimed that several people from your old high school were trying to contact you. Since you are not sure if it is a scam email or not, my first piece of advice would be to avoid opening it or clicking on any links that it contains. Scam emails can't hurt you if you never open them. If you have any suspicion that something might be a scam, it's usually best to err on the side of caution. That being said, sometimes you want to be really sure. If your former high school classmates really are trying to get in touch with you, you wouldn't want to leave them hanging. A good first step is to think about why you're suspicious that the email might be a scam email in the first place. Ask yourself if you did anything recently that would prompt your old classmates to reach out to you. Unexpected or unsolicited emails are more likely to be scams. If you recently signed up for the mailing list at a class reunion, there is a greater chance that the email is authentic. Otherwise, it's likely to be a scam. Checking an email sender can also help you determine if it is legitimate or a scam. It's a good idea to check the sender's exact email address in addition to the name that shows up in your inbox. Do you know who the sender is? Scam emails are almost always sent by unfamiliar email addresses. Pay special attention to what shows up after the at sign in the sender's email address. If it's something unusual, that's a red flag. Once you've seen the sender's name and email address, you can do a Google search asking if they are a scam. Other people might have already fallen victim to the scam and post about it online. Keep in mind that scammers will sometimes send emails that look like they are from legitimate services like Netflix or Amazon. These emails, known as phishing emails, try to trick you into entering your login information on a fake version of the website that they claim to be from. A common phishing tactic is to tell you that your account has been canceled and that you need to log in to reactivate it. If you receive an email like this, don't. Click on the link in the email. Instead, use your web browser to navigate to the website in question, just like you usually do. That will allow you to check if there are really any problems with your account without being redirected to a fake website. Thankfully, there are some ways you can avoid receiving scam and spam emails in the first place. The best way to limit unwanted emails is to be really careful about where you enter your email address online. Only enter your email address on websites you totally trust. If you don't have to, try not to enter your email address at all. You can also set up a separate email account just to use when a website or service asks you for your email. Using a separate email to sign up for online accounts can help ensure that your primary email account will only service legitimate correspondence.
Let's give it up for Fed Up Ministries, written by Michael Jones. Let's give it up for Fed Up Ministries, for they've been putting in work throughout Washtenaw County. From Ann Arbor to Ipsy, they've been feeding low-income and homeless people not only food to sustain life, but food for thought and spiritual growth, while also providing employment and volunteering opportunities for our community. I want to give a shout-out to a few of the many wonderful people that make it happen. Reverend Ann Taylor McCant, Kitchen Team Leader Corey Fuller, Volunteer Kimberly Sales, Kitchen Staff Todd Crowley, Kitchen Staff Brandy Hill, and Volunteer Marissa Moore and Phil Hunn. I had a chance to talk to my friends at Liberty Plaza downtown Ann Arbor, and I asked them all the same question. What is your favorite thing about working or volunteering for Fed Up Ministries? And everybody had the same answer, the community they serve. I interviewed Kimberly Sales and Marissa Moore, who are college interns. Sales, who has volunteered for 1 year and now finishing up her internship and is a recent graduate, is moving out of state to further her career and continue to be involved in communities such as this one, said what she enjoys the most is working with her team, co-workers. Moore, who is now on her third week of volunteering and will be volunteering for a year also, said she enjoys interacting with the community and the environment Fed Up Ministry provides. Notably, you can find the big food truck at Liberty Plaza in Ann Arbor at noon and at Ipsy Transit Center at 1:30 p.m. every Wednesday. But now the community can also find the big food truck at 16 South Washington Street, Ypsilanti, Michigan, at Growing Hope location every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. for breakfast and worship. Heads up, Fed Up Ministry announced mobile showers and laundry units for those in need at the Growing Hope location every Thursday morning and other locations to be announced soon. Come to any one of these three locations to enjoy food, community, and more.
Read, quote, outsourcing duty, the moral exploitation of the American soldier, end quote. By David K. E. Dodge, ground cover contributor. Over 5 years ago, I wrote a book review which was published in the May 2018 issue of Ground Cover News. The book reviewed in that issue is titled, What Have We Done? The Moral Injury of Our Longest Wars, by David Wood. At the time that book was written in 2016, the concept of moral injury in veterans and service personnel who are racked with guilt over things they have done in combat was just starting to receive attention by the Department of Defense and the Department of Veterans Affairs. In his book, Mr. Wood comprehensively describes what is meant by moral injury and the state of the art of helping persons who suffer from moral injury. In, quote, outsourcing duty, end quote, Robillard and Strouser redirect the issue of moral injury from its burden upon veterans and service personnel to parties who, in a sense, obliviously carry guilt, which is, to my mind, greater and more shameful than that of combatants, the citizens of the nation which grooms, targets, selects, recruits, trains, and sends especially vulnerable parties into combat in never-ending, gratuitous wars. The term the 1% has been around for some time, at least as early as the start of the Great Recession of 2008, referring to the 1% of the U.S. citizenry who control a vastly disproportionate amount of the nation's wealth. Quote, outsourcing duty, end quote, redirects its readers' attention to another 1%, the portion of the U.S. citizenry who incurred dirty hands on behalf of another portion who, in too large part, is indifferent to the nation's eternal war-making. The maldistribution of the moral burdens of war creates a sense of injustice in our military personnel. This is succinctly characterized by the statement of an unknown service member who served in Iraq, which statement heads up Chapter 3 of the book. Quote, "We were at war while America was at the mall." Those of us who no longer wish to be obliviously complicit in our nation's warmongering will do well to read this book. Outsourcing Duty is available online at my favorite bookstore, Literati, for $38. Buy it, read it, keep it. Outsourcing Duty by Michael J. Robillard and Bradley J. Strausser.
The Students America Forgot. I currently attend an alternative high school in Ypsilanti, as only 1.6 of students attend an alternative school. I have a different experience than many. I used to think of alternative schools as where the worst possible students attend school, juvie. But this common preconceived notion I had was ultimately shattered. Further adding to my rare perspective is my identity as an Asian American student, a demographic almost non-existent in the alternative education system. Enrolled but without particular reason, I spend most of my time feeling like a fly on the wall, just as an outsider looking in. Having been there for well over a year, it has gifted me with my most cherished school-related memory. That memory is one of accomplishment and joy, but not of my own personal accomplishment and joy. It was one of my first days there as I sunk into a routine of plopping down on a chair, eyes fixated on a computer screen, engrossed in schoolwork. But this was not my daily routine. Commotion jolted me out of my trance-like state. I darted my eyes to find out what's happening in front of me. A student excitedly spoke with my teacher. She proudly revealed she had just graduated, and the dozen people I shared the room with applauded her, celebrating the grand accomplishment. Joining in felt like clapping for someone I had known for a lifetime. But I didn't know her, and I would imagine that those dozen people had not known her either. At that moment, we supported that student as a community despite our lack of familiarity with her, cheering for someone some of us did not know before then. It's why I treasure that moment still to this day. An alternative school's provided sense of community and support could be treasurable factors to others as well. It remains an option for those going through excruciating life circumstances such as homelessness, teen parenthood, and LGBTQ discrimination to further their education. But unfortunately, lots of alternative schools across the country don't provide this type of community or a safe environment. For many students, alternative schools are places they're sentenced to, not options. According to a 2017 ProPublica survey, 29 out of 39 state education departments stated that school districts retain the power to transfer students involuntarily to alternative programs due to disciplinary infractions. A staggering number of students are involuntarily sent to these schools for minor offenses and entirely fall off their educational track. Furthermore, this survey demonstrates that these transfers contribute to America's decrease in graduation rates and academic performance. On top of that, a majority of these institutions lack the resources to offer adequate mental health support for the students sent their way. According to the U.S. Government Accountability Office, 47% of the traditional schools had at least one social worker, whereas for alternative schools, that number is an abysmal 26%. In every school district, surveyed students had experienced debilitating trauma such as homelessness, poverty, the death of a loved one, or gang violence. Such findings remain consistent with trauma research surrounding behavior and education. From the staffing issues to low budgets, these institutions lack the capability to meet the students' psychological needs. Unfortunately, this is another case of the embarrassing lack of support for the most undeserved and vulnerable populations in the United States. Lacking the necessary funds to make a widespread difference, these schools struggle in a climate where public education is already underfunded enough as it is. This experience has changed my perception and opened my eyes to the pitfalls of America's education system. My time there has imparted me with any experience I hold dear while fueling my desires to bring awareness to our system's downfall. Thus, alternative schools require an extensive revamp, noticeably because the students attending them always end up forgotten.
Love by Love, Saving the Lost. A Column on Compassion by Marcona Love. At what point does a homeless person become completely disconnected? So disconnected that other people are only a temporary access to their necessary functionalities. They've become numb. Numb to dumb the blues of pain and sorrow. The glazed overlook with no emotional energy, the air of surrender, and for every action, it feels as if to go on is to draw energy from the very marrow of the bones holding them together. The feeling that one more confusion could break them. The view ahead may become dim, short-sighted, so much so that the nearsightedness is, if it ain't within my grasp, then it's of no concern to me. The will to push on is fading out of sight. Many assuredly would say, I'm being far-reaching on where I presume them to be. I could reply, have you been there? I have been there. Briefly, but enough to understand what I'm witnessing. I was one lucky shib, special human being, pronounced shib, in a cast that felt as if it was the size of a lotto draw, when an angelic light shined a new way for me. In the end, it was just luck that pulled me out, that a savior was there to help me. Right place, right time. How do the land brokers put it? Location, location, location. Then how do the majority of the lost and the lonely get back when they've apparently checked out? Love. We first talked about our shibs in the article, What the Street Took, then continued the conversation in Kona's White Light, and finally started reaching deeper into questions for solutions in Back in the Crack. Meanwhile, the beatdown continues, the disconnect, the loss. By beatdown, I refer to the summation of our previous discussions in my articles and references. While the housing crisis and inflation are getting worse, stacking more on the shibs. Who does or doesn't get the lucky paths? The same paths don't go the same way for everyone. Making the right choice is sometimes the wrong choice. Nobody can ever know what awaits down the road. We are all one, the same, with the exception of choices and detours that led us down alternate paths. Once the lost are completely disconnected, they will start to spiral down the rabbit hole. Some never return to reality, so the first step is to reach in and pull them out. That is all love and patience. They may then be able to reconnect through social service, but unless the system adjusts to find a way to keep them from losing them again, most of them will fall back out. Are you able to not take offense from their brash response? Can you be of no judgment, regardless of not being able to understand their choices? Are you fully sincere? Let me forewarn you, this is a daunting and possibly dangerous task. Living on the street, you better be ready to defend yourself. The lost are bound to be about nothing but defense, more or less in a constant state of PTSD, fight or flight. Can you be there to support them in their new awareness? This would be a good follow-up question to how far you can go with them. This isn't just giving a peddler a dollar on the corner. This is a commitment. This is a sacrifice that loves you back. Questions to oneself should be posed in advance of an approach of this manner. A hasty approach could merely scare somebody off or make them even more reluctant to connect. Sensitivity and patience must be the virtues when attempting to bond with someone who may feel completely broken. Also probably justifiably guarded, not paranoid necessarily. They may feel the need to feel you out, test your resolve a little, to know you for real. Don't take that personally. Just because you might not see the light in their eyes, be assured it's hiding in them, burning the fire to fight on. They only need a brave, compassionate hand to reach in and pull them out. That's a lot, though. Enough. Everything is measured in relativity. There have been many more anonymous, selfless, gifted humanitarians through history that lived and died in obscurity than the few raised high. Real, compassionate human beings are what's needed to save our shibs. The point being made is that stop looking to anyone else other than you to take a pause in life to help someone else's back up. If you can't change the world, change yourself. Matt Johnson. At what point after the 1960s did corporate America start regulating love distribution? And when did the hippies stop giving love, stop saving love? Oh, that's right, capitalism. Love for sale. Americans are programmed consumers looking to the billboards for a dictation on how they should look, feel, and express themselves, followed by the rest of American society. Conform or be cast out. Rush. Everybody is more concerned about how they appear to others than what they do to or for them. I want to call out to our disconnected, our lost, but they can't hear us. They are not listening anymore. This is why I'm speaking out loud to my readers. Please, my loving concerned, what I call the ones following my message of love and acceptance, open your hearts. Feel someone else's pain. That is empathy. Feeling someone else's pain takes some of that person's burden. Real love is sacrifice. Love is not used to sacrifice. It is created from within the act. The final call to action is to the ones that already live in the world of the lost. Our active shibs can help others. Help the lost by sharing knowledge of the street and the lost. Nobody knows more about how the lost got lost than the homeless. They are a step behind them, but hopefully getting a step forward. Shibs have already learned how to be humble, empathetic, compassionate, and understanding, and know better than to judge. Come on, Shibs. Let's bring the others back. They may end up being the one to have a hand for you when life turns. Anybody remember when there was some authenticity still to the statement, love thy neighbor? By this time in human history, we shouldn't need that statement to be a commandment. We should be in a place in our humanity where we would consider nothing less than to know we all deserve that love. Human beings want love to give love. Giving love is receiving love. When you love others, you love yourself. So love the way in which you desire to be loved. Without a noise, without my pride, I reach out from the inside. Peter Gabriel. This is the call to action. How do we urgently connect with these lost, disparaged individuals that the system is aware of but can't connect to using conventional protocol? The system's most recent solution, the deja vu nightmare, put them in a sanitarium. All the grace to our lost. May they find their way back to us more assuredly with our compassionate reach. We all should be so blessed. Sincerely, Marcona Love with Kona. Author's note, Kona opened my eyes on how to love, choosing sacrifice, and how to truly witness and experience life at its fullest, regardless of determinant. She will always be the light that shines upon my path through this cosmic journey and keeps me connected. I sincerely wish everyone to be so fortunate. For comments and suggestions for upcoming topics, please email me at konagod.love5@gmail.com.